বর্তমানে তো স্পিকিং বারবারা,
থ্যাংক ইউ।
হ্যালো পিপল,
হ্যালো বারবারা,
আই এম বারবারা, আই এম আ কল স্পিকার,
হাই বারবারা,
আই হ্যাভ টু লুক এট দ্য ক্যামেরা,
হ্যালো,
Can't look at me.
Have to look at you.
Okay. I'm just going to look at the people in the room. And
there you go.
People on Zoom are going to figure it out. Okay. Yes, I am a compulsive eater and, well, maybe a control issue person. I want to thank the organizers for putting this on today and inviting me to speak. Let's get a couple of the specifics out of the way. I am a compulsive eater, no question about it. I came into OA on October 7, 1995, and I became abstinent on October 8, the next day, 1995. I'm maintaining about a 65 plus weight loss. When I came into OA, I was somewhere north of 225 pounds. And I stopped weighing myself because it was bothersome and I didn't want to know. So I'm maintaining that weight loss and I have a handful of sponsees. I have a sponsor who's on here and I should call her more often, clearly. But as she said to me, when I said that to her, she goes, "You call when you need to," and I do. I love the topic of hope because, as several people have said here already today, if you didn't have hope, you wouldn't be sitting in this room. If you didn't have hope, you wouldn't be coming to an OA meeting. And that is a for sure, no question. And hope is the solution. And we heard one acronym about what it was from the people who shared. And there's a couple other acronyms I thought I'd share with you. Hope. Hang on. Pain ends. Hang on. Pain ends. And another one, which is the one that speaks to me the most, is hearing other people's experiences. I have often said, or more than often, almost all the time said, I think the most important word in our 12 steps is the first word of the first step, we. Because I tried to do it for a lot of years by myself. I was a liar, cheater, and thief around food, in my family, and in my workplace, and just in life in general. I stole from my secretaries. When I would be working late at night in the office, I was an attorney, and I knew who the other compulsive eaters were. I didn't know who that compulsive eater was, mind you. But I knew where their stashes were. And I went and stole food from them. And they couldn't complain because it was their secret stash. Right? And I'm making probably three or four more times than they are. But I'm stealing the food. I'm going to other people's desks at work and emptying their M&M jar and having to go down to the 7-Eleven to buy 2 1-pound bags, one to replace the jar, one for me. And so I had tremendous fear. I mean, growing up, this is what I did with food. I'm the oldest of three kids, and I grew up in northern Maine. A great place to grow up, by the way. A phenomenal place to grow up. And we had a pantry, we called it the AMP. And in the AMP were all the foodstuffs, including all the candy. And I would go and take the handful of candy, put it in my pockets, and then volunteer to either go and do the chore that was on the furthest side of the yard, or I would go in the laundry room and iron. So I could eat all that candy by myself and then take the wrappers. And depending on who was going to see me, I could get them in the garbage at the bottom. And I learned this at 11 and 12 years old, where to hide the wrappers. Or I just had to be quick behind the couch in the living room. and then be sure and get to the couch before, we call that gramanage, the big spring cleaning. One time I didn't, my mom pulls the couch back and then said, my mother said, what the hell? And of course I said, geez, Patsy and Mike really don't know how to throw the garbage away. Brother and sister. And the other thing is we'd be sitting, and this is where the shame comes from too. We'd be sitting at the table at dinner, and my parents would be saying, my brother and sister, I wish you could be more like your sister Barbara. She's always volunteering to do the chores that no one wants to do. And of course, I sat there like, yeah, look at me, right? And inside, I knew why I was volunteering to do those chores. And so I could eat in privacy, not be caught, and enjoy what I thought I was enjoying. Take the edge off. And the edge for me was I was never caught. I don't know where that came from. I could probably go through years of psychotherapy. I did enough. I could go do more and find out where it all comes from. But the bottom line is that's why I ate. Because I never felt good enough or okay. I'm speaking really loud.
I know. Just a message.
Sorry. Who's our, where's the microphone? Can you make sure I'm talking loud enough? Because I'm using a classroom voice here. It'll hurt people's ears in the room.
It's up all the way.
Okay. Are you better? Okay, thanks for letting me know that. I swear I'm really sorry. Now, so, hearing other people's experiences, we is the foundation of hope. That's where I come from. And I will tell you, I've also come to understand that the best meetings that occur are where there is identification, where someone can say, oh, I ate like that too. And hope, you don't have to eat like that anymore. And again, hope is such a pervasive part of our fellowship, of our step work, of our recovery, of our remodeling of ourselves. I kind of think of it as the secret sauce of recovery. Hope is the secret sauce. And it, and we heard about it in, I think, one of the readings, and I think Kurt may have said it. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. That is hope combined with willingness. You can have willingness, but if you don't have hope, it becomes a dollar. If you have hope and no willingness, it's a fantasy. You have to put the hope in the footwork. At least that's what I have to do. I don't know about you. Maybe you're different than me. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the steps and hope. Step one. We did feel powerless over food, and our lives were a bit unmanageable. When we did that, in that moment, there was no more pretending. There was no more wondering what was true. I'm powerless over that food, and my life's unmanageable, and it was hope with a little bit of freedom. We hopefully continue on our path. And we get to step two, which has the principle of hope. And we come to believe that there's a power greater than ourselves. Oftentimes, I know for the people I sponsor, oftentimes it's the group, the meeting, the OA meeting or the OA fellowship. Sometimes it's a higher power like a God, but they came to believe that they are no longer in charge of how they ate or what they ate. They have hope that it could be different. And then step three, the insanity gets to go away when we make the decision and move forward. There's so much hope in those three steps. Does it end there? No. Refer back to our prior speaker. We have to do steps four and five, which is the manure pile, and we're looking for the pony, right? When we do that fourth step, we're making room for new ideas and new feelings. So there's hope that I no longer have to carry the burden of all the rocks that I had in the backpack that I collected for my life and carried around with me, plop them down into any room where I was having a conversation with someone and said, ignore the rocks, I'll be here. Ignore the pile of manure, I'm going to be right here. And when we did that fourth step, when we gave it away, maybe it made you afraid, maybe anxious, but we gave it away. We no longer had to carry that backpack of rocks and manure. It no longer had to sit there with us when we were talking and sharing with other people, whether it was in the workplace. And this is the way it was for me. I hope it's that way for you. I had a very big backpack. Plus, my ego was the size of Golden Onsen. So no one else could be in there at the same time I was. And when I did that fourth and fifth step, all the resentments that I made so large, that right size to an 8x14 piece of paper, many pages, it got reduced to that size. And it made room for those new ideas and new feelings that I experienced hope in a way that I had never experienced before. And I'm not compulsively eating while I'm doing this. So I'm having a lot of feelings because I don't know what you're like when a food item is removed from you. Wow! That's how I took care of myself. That was my solution. That was my medication. And it's not there anymore. So now I'm feeling everything. Thank goodness I had the rooms with other people sharing their experiences about how to do it. Because then I would hope that I could work through it. Step 6 and 7. Oh my gosh. Talk about being a toddler and then going into almost like junior high. We're watching ourselves grow. I watched myself grow. I wasn't lying anymore. I wasn't stealing anymore. I wasn't hiding anymore. And it was just Barbara showing up. Now, what's going on for me in my first time through the steps at 6 and 7? I'm losing weight. People are commenting. And I'm a judgmental, self-righteous, superior perfectionist. I'm angry. All of these things. And you're noticing my weight loss. And I go into meetings and I say, those sons of them. You know, they didn't say anything to me when I was fat. Now they're only talking to me because I'm slender. You know, and it's such an interesting thing to look back at that now and say, they were two. If they liked me, they must have been 6 screws, right? And if they didn't like me, well, then they were just stupid. So no one could win in my life. And then in step 6 and 7, I was asked to present my self-righteousness and to present my judgment and to present my gossip and my self-centeredness, all of it in its variety of forms to my higher power. And to leave it on the shelf for my higher power. I don't know which one he was going to take or use, but my hope was that if I humbly asked, they could be removed. Reduced in size was my greatest, you know, I was being practical. I didn't think God could quite remove them because they were quite large and they were part of my professional life, or so I thought. And I had hope as I found I wasn't going to every fight that I was invited to. You know what it's like to walk away from a conversation that could have escalated into a spitting contest with swear words and bad feelings? Oh my God, the first time that happened to me, I was at work and it was an important one, and opposing counsel said, blah, 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 blah to me. And I went, okay, you may be right, walked away. And I know in his head, he was going, I'm right. And in my head, I'm going, he's so effing wrong. But the hope that I had when after I walked away from that situation, I was filled with something, and it wasn't food. I mean, I get goosebumps right now when I think about that situation. There was great hope in watching me grow and having other people, the we, say, well, Barbara, you appear to be a little less angry.
What?
I wasn't angry. Yeah, you were. And, you know, when someone in a meeting leans over, who's a Vietnam vet, she whispers in your ear, you know, I know a lot of vets who've been angry, but you really are angry. God bless him. He's a friend now, but I don't have to be that way, and I've got to watch myself grow. More hope, more happiness. 8 and 9. Oh my gosh. Step 8. Well, just write a list, it says. Just write a list. Well, yeah. But then I found all the patterns of how I interacted with people from the workplace, the family, from friends, to other drivers on the road. God blesses them all. And people in the grocery store line will have more than 12 items. And, you know, I learned the patterns of my behavior that my character defects have given a little extra into. And when I saw the patterns, I was not devastated. What did I have? I had hope. Hope that I could change. Hope that I would be given new direction. Hope. Oh, gosh. And I kept listening to your experiences of how you did things, how you handled things, successfully and unsuccessfully. Equally important. And then on step 10, well, I shouldn't skip step 9 now, should I? you know, going to see those secretaries to make amends, fun. Good times. But I was light, so that's a strong benefit. I should drink some of these before I keep going. And I sat down and got to tell them, and some of them were compulsive eaters. Some of them were just food orders, you know, they weren't compulsive eaters. And I got to share with them that I was the Overeaters Anonymous. And I got to share with them because they saw that my body had gotten smaller and that I seemed to be smiling a bit more. And what did I offer them? Hope of a different way. And I was continuing to be remodeled inside. The remodeling had occurred on the outside. My body was smaller. I was wearing the same size clothes. All the clothes in my closet fit. I didn't have to worry what was going to be clean or what might fit today. So the outside remodeling had been done. And this was the interior work. Boy, I was a happier gal. And people noticed. And I suddenly was the little twin who might be digging through a pile full of poop to look for the pony and not afraid to pick up it. And as opposed to the other person afraid to touch something because of poop. I became an optimist because I hoped that every day that I showed up, it was going to be a good day. Step 10. Oh my God, you mean I get to keep this life? Step 10. I get to keep what I have? You mean it could get better? What an amazing feeling to have with step 10. It could get better. Another level of hope in the steps that happened to me and continues to happen to me. I think of step 11 as one of the sources of hope. That's where I get. I gotta tell you, my morning starts with, well, I'm open now, so I have the people. But then I come back and I make my bed. I've made my bed almost every day since October 8th, 1995. I refused to do it before then because I was mean to as a child. I'm not gonna do it unless company's coming. I make my bed, throw a pillow on the floor, and I say my mind. And it varies. Sometimes it's just whatever. Hands up, whatever. Oftentimes, more often than not, it's thank you, and I have my hands out. I can't do anything except this. I say thank you, thank you. Thank you for the gift of absence you delivered today. God. I pray to treat it with dignity and respect that you would have me treat it. Thank you. And then could you please help fill in the blank? We're having a hard time and it's irritating. You know, that's Barbara's variation of the resentment prayer. Give them everything they want, not really, because, and it usually takes me a week in the resentment prayer to be able to say nice things. I'm usually saying swear words the first part of the resentment prayer, but it's prayer, and I'm showing up, and I've learned that it works. Step 12 comes back for me to the first word of prayer. First word of first step, we. There is such hope in the we. In service for we. When we carry the message for we. And I get to live in hope and strength. Now I will tell you, I carried the message in Costco. While I'm looking at something, I'm going to purchase this. Gal will come up, she goes, is that a keto thing? You know, is that good for keto? And I, you know, I don't know. Right? She goes, well, I'm really trying to lose weight. And I said, no, well, I'm keeping about 65 pounds off. And that is a attention grabber. That's marketing. That's right there. Now. That's attraction, right? Yeah. And she said, well, how'd you do it? And I said, well, you know, there's this 12-step program. You've heard of AA, right? She goes, yeah, I didn't know. You wrote it. Really? What is it? And so I tell her. And she goes, oh. And then if they ask more questions, it's a lovely conversation. If they don't, okay, please, you'll be in the keto aisle. Let's get away from her. Because that's me. But I'll carry the message whenever, if ever I can drop. Oh, yeah, I maintained about 65 pounds weight loss for 27 years. What the? Really? Yes. I have heard, hearing other people's experiences, I have gotten to live through sitting by, standing by, and being present for my father. Yes, he went away. I got to be there. I got to be there and tell my mom, because she asked. Am I dying? Yes, mom, you are. I had always promised to tell her the truth. And I got to sit there with her until she took the last breath. I didn't know how to do these things before, but I heard other people in the way that walked through all of these feelings of sadness. That walked through. I can tell you, the first 15 years of my recovery in Overeaters Anonymous, my mother was the effing problem. There was no hope for her. And then a sponsor suggesting that maybe there might be if I changed. And so, I, you know, maybe not 15, maybe just 12, but the last 5 or 6 years, I can carry a resentment pretty good. But for the last 5 or 6 years of her life, I was her daughter. And she loved me, and she was my mom, and I loved her. And there was hope that I learned from other men and women that had resolved and found ways to go through their lives with their parents, no matter what, and to not compulsively eat. Hope is the secret sauce of recovery. Without it, why would I come to meeting? Why would I show up a day in a way? I could easily have said no. I have hope every day. I have hope that my golf handicap will go below 15. Is that in recovery? Only because now I can walk 18 holes of golf and play golf. to do that when I was over 225. And you guys drinking heavily at the time, I would for you. But other than that, life has changed for me. And when I'm asked, hey, by a clerk at the store, by a neighbor on the street, Barbara, how's you doing? How are you doing? I'm great. I'm outstanding. It's almost like saying you've lost 65 pounds. Because the reaction is very much, huh? Outstanding. I said, yeah, this is a really good day today. And it was nothing more, thank you, than abstinent and free and connected to my higher power. So I try to remember, may I always remember, that the power within me is far greater than any fear before me. And hope is always enough. Thanks.